are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Tain't necessarily so. The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, tain't necessarily so. Them's were the words of Sport and Life, the drug dealer in Porgy and Bess. And personally, I don't know a Unitarian who would challenge that sentiment. On the whole, we pride ourselves on not believing six impossible things before breakfast, like the world was created in 6 days flat, flooded by God who subsequently supplied a rainbow as a sign that he wouldn't do that again, not a sign of LGBTI inclusion, sorry folks, Jesus was born of the Virgin Mary and after escaped the tomb, talked to some people before going to heaven. There you go, that's six. Now, apart from atheists, Unitarians, liberal Christians, and many other people don't believe that stuff literally either. But my point is that those who do are quite vehement about it, and what is worse, extend their thinking to six impossible things like this. The moon landing was fake. COVID-19 was released by China as a first step to world domination. The moon landing was fake. COVID-19 was released by China as a first step to world domination. The author of To Kill a Mockingbird was Truman Capote, not Harper Lee. Bill Gates is developing a vaccine for COVID-19 which incorporates a nanoparticle which will enable him or your government to track you for the rest of time. Climate change is a hoax. Donald Trump was appointed by God to drain the swamp, so vote for him. Now, if this sort of stuff remained restricted to churchgoers in America's Bible Belt, we could, wisely or unwisely, ignore it. But this sort of thinking is not confined to Bible bashers. It's part of the culture of a surprisingly large subset of the population in many countries. Countries which have almost 100% literacy rates and provide more than 10 years of schooling to most of their citizens. It has political ramifications, which are frightening. And it brings me back to the idea that I explored. A fortnight ago. That idea is that the modern world has abandoned a fundamental way of thinking, speaking, and acquiring knowledge. We have, in our desire to produce a wholly rational scientific faith, abolished mythos in favour of logos, and this has left a dangerous hole in our cultural foundations. We, that is, Unitarians, are very proud to claim as one of our own Charles Darwin. Now, he delayed the release of his iconoclastic publication, The Origin of the Species, because he could see how it could be construed to destroy religion, in his view, essential social glue. And indeed, his fears were realized, not perhaps because of the content of his theories, but because the churches had been undergoing changes. Ever since Descartes, who preceded Darwin by some 200 years, the idea of God has been becoming more restricted by the limits of human thinking and the spirit of logos rather than mythos. Now, World War I had a huge impact on Christendom. Where was God in the trenches or in the pandemic which followed? Paul Tillich was a Prussian-born theologian who served as an army chaplain, after which he had two breakdowns. He became a professor in theology at the University of Frankfurt, until he was expelled by the Nazis in 1933. He saw the modern God, the one that both sides prayed for to be on their side, as idolatrous. The concept of a personal God interfering with natural events or being the cause of natural events makes God a natural object, he argued, a being amongst beings, maybe a higher being, but nevertheless a being. This is not only the destruction of the physical system, but even more the destruction of any meaningful idea of God. The human mind, he said, is a perpetual manufacturer of idols. Even Orthodox theology is nothing other than idolatry. Symbols such as God or Providence enable people to endure terror and the horror of death and to look through the ebb and flow of temporal life to reveal universal or eternal being. But with the loss of the ability to interpret symbols and the preference for factual knowledge, the symbols themselves became opaque. Also, literally very ugly if you compare the massive modern unadorned Christian crosses with exquisite products of Orthodox Christianity in centuries past. Transcendence won't shine through opaque symbols. When symbols lose their power and are spoken of in a literal manner, people make statements which are inaccurate and untrue. People will claim blood transfusions are against God's law. Women should take a back seat and leave leadership to men. Jesus doesn't like gays. People will claim a disease is a punishment for homosexuality and a flood is divine retribution for legalizing abortions. In a world that puts its eggs in the one basket, Logos, because that basket delivered such spectacular results in our technological and economic development, myth was discredited. The scientific method was thought to be the only reliable means of attaining truth. Theologians began to adopt the criteria of science. The myths were interpreted as empirically, rationally, and historically verifiable. We lost the art of interpreting the old tales of seas parting miraculously or the blind learning to see and began to understand faith, revelation, myth, mystery and belief in ways which would have shocked our ancestors. In particular, the concept of belief has changed so that a credulous acceptance of creedal doctrines became the prerequisite of faith. Have you noticed how religious people are spoken of nowadays as people of faith or true believers, as if accepting Orthodox dogma were their most important activity? And I'm not just referring to Bible Belt, but Christendom across the globe. Karen Armstrong, my go-to theologian, writes, "This rationalized interpretation of religion has resulted in two distinctively modern phenomena, fundamentalism and atheism. This rationalized interpretation of religion has resulted in two distinctively modern phenomena, fundamentalism and atheism. The two are related. The defensive piety popularly known as fundamentalism erupted in almost every faith during the 20th century. In their desire to produce a wholly rational scientific faith that abolished mythos in favor of logos, Christian fundamentalists have interpreted scripture with a literalism that is unparalleled in the history of religion. In the United States, Protestant fundamentalists have evolved an ideology known as creation science, which regards the myths of the Bible as scientifically accurate. They have therefore campaigned against the teaching of evolution in public schools because it contradicts the creation story in Genesis. Now, this is a very sad state of affairs, but so is the current state of atheism. Historically, atheism did not involve a rejection of the sacred, but rather of a particular conception of divinity. The pagans called both Christians and Muslims atheists for rejecting the gods. The radical new idea of ditching them all for one god was blasphemous from their point of view. So atheism is dependent on the sort of theism it's kicking against. 19th century and early 20th century atheism of people like Freud, Nietzsche and Karl Marx is directed against the theology that developed in Europe, mainly in the modern period, the sort of Christianity that elevated humility above the struggle for equality or power of the people. the sort of Christianity that failed eventually to excommunicate Hitler or stop the Holocaust, and insisted that God was simultaneously all-knowing, all-powerful, and all-loving. Now, the more recent atheism of Sam Harris, Richard Dawkins, and Christopher Hitchens is directed more at the Christianity that developed in the United States of America, and so it's directed at fundamentalism. These three atheists conflate fundamentalism with religion generally, which weakens their case against God, because fundamentalism is generally unorthodox and frequently misrepresents the tradition it's trying to defend. For example, Muslim extremists strip women of rights and behead men, despite the teachings of Muhammad, which support women, and the meaning of Islam, which refers to peace and submission to God's will. And Christian extremists will oppose the central teachings of Jesus to love thy neighbour and judge not by sporting killer queer for Christ bumper stickers or bombing abortion clinics. Now, the sort of atheism I respect and indeed am in awe of is the atheism of the theologian I mentioned earlier, Paul Tillich. He argues that God does not exist. He is being itself beyond essence and existence. Therefore, to argue that God exists is to deny him. He wrote, "We can no longer speak to God easily, to anybody, because he will immediately question, does God exist?" Now, the very asking of that question signifies that the symbols of God have become meaningless, for God in the question has become one of the innumerable objects in time and space which may or may not exist, and that's not the meaning of God at all. So, God is not an object of cognition, like the people around us. Tillich looks through the finite symbol to find the God who appears when God has disappeared in the anxiety of doubt. Now, that sounds like a man who lived through World War I and experienced the bitter failure of the theology he had been taught. Tillich liked to call God the ground of our being, like the Atman of the Upanishads, which was both the Brahman as well as the deepest core of the individual self. So a sense of participation in God does not mean alienation from our own nature or the world, as the 19th century atheists implied, but rather a return to our true selves. The wish to return to our true selves may explain the tremendous appeal of Buddhism to modern atheists who have a sense of the sacred. Here's a course overview for a typical online course available to Westerners. The Buddhist path to awakening transforms the way we see ourselves. Through the practice of meditation, we learn to examine our beliefs and assumptions and to explore our experience in the present moment. In Tibetan Buddhism, the principles that guide this inner exploration are presented as the four systems of Buddhist thought. These four philosophical systems are practical in nature. They are roadmaps of the mind that can guide us in meditation and help us to undo the causes of confusion and suffering. Now, Tibetan Buddhism gets less atheist-friendly as you go into it. It turns out there are a lot of deities and demons in Tibetan Buddhism, which is rather more Baroque in style than Theravada Buddhism, which we find closer to home in Southeast Asia. But one great thing is we're not going to be tangled up by thinking of any of the characters in these stories as being historical. The downside is that these myths may not come alive in our imaginations. My own view is that as Unitarians, we should heed the call to move beyond scientific reductionism. It's not attractive. It's limiting. We should not waste energy debunking fundies or arguing with the orthodox or working through what we don't believe and why and what we do believe and why. I'm not advocating a total retreat from brain work. It's rather too much fun for people like me. But I am taking on board Armstrong's strong contention that religion is more than belief. It's something that can be learned by constant, dedicated practice. Lectio Divina, meditation, gratitude practices, Tai Chi, yoga, chanting, choir, whatever. Anything that leads to transcending your current abilities, your capacity for love or joy or compassion. We don't need to understand how these practices work any more than a skater needs to be on top of all the physics that enables them to sail over the ice on the thin blade. A musician may begin directing their body by conscious logical deliberation, but won't develop into a musician until they can lose themselves in the music, as a dancer becomes inseparable from the dance, or bushwalkers feel entirely at one with themselves and the external world as they stride through the wonders of nature. These are satisfactions deeper than feeling good. It's what the Greeks called ekstasis, stepping outside the norm. The early Taoists saw religion as a knack acquired by constant practice. Zhuangzi explained it was no good trying to analyze religious teachings logically. Citing a carpenter, he says, "When I work the wheel, if I hit it too softly, pleasant as this is, it doesn't make for a good wheel. If I hit it furiously, I get tired and the wheel doesn't work. So not too soft, not too vigorous. I grasp it in my hand and hold it in my heart, and I cannot express this by word of mouth. I just know it." In the end, with constant practice, hands move by themselves. Time vanishes. You forget yourself. This self-forgetfulness, Zhuangzi explained as an ekstasis that enabled you to step outside the prism of ego and experience the divine. People who acquired this knack discovered a transcendent dimension of life that was not simply an external reality out there, but was identical with the deepest level of their being. This reality, which they've called God, Tao, Brahman, or Nirvana, has been part of human life. But it's impossible to explain what it was in terms of logos. Our scientifically oriented knowledge seeks to master reality, explain it, and bring it under the control of reason. But delight in unknowing has also been part of the human experience. You may recognize this quote, "I do not know what I may appear to the world, but to myself I seem to have been only like a boy playing on the seashore and diverting myself in now and then finding a smoother pebble or a prettier shell than ordinary, whilst the great ocean of truth lay all undiscovered before me. I do not know what I may appear to the world, but to myself I seem to have been only like a boy playing on the seashore and diverting myself in now and then finding a smoother pebble or a prettier shell than ordinary, whilst the great ocean of truth lay all undiscovered before me." It was Isaac Newton, the scientist and free thinker in our John Dowie painting of great Unitarians. Now, Albert Einstein may have said, "When the solution is simple, God is answering." But he also said, "The most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. It is the source of all true art and science." And indeed, poets, philosophers, and mathematicians all find the contemplation of the insoluble is a source of joy, astonishment, and contentment. Maybe the much-used adjective awesome has deeper roots than we think. One of our most endearing human traits is to have ideas and experiences that are beyond our cognitive grasp. We grow into some of these. They are a source of quests and joys. When we push our minds to the extreme, we apprehend transcendence. Music was the example I gave a fortnight ago of how we transcend ordinary reason. We may start with the body, breath, voice, horsehair, gut, our pulse. We may include very cerebral aspects like mathematical proportions and musical theory. But in the end, we transcend body and mind. Music goes beyond the reach of words. It's not about anything. Beethoven's music does not represent joy or sorrow or unrequited love, but it can elicit those feelings in players and listeners. Listening to a sad piece doesn't give you a sad experience. On the contrary, it's not about us in an egotistical sense, but it's about us in a universal sense. Music is full of ideas that transcend language. As a literature student, I hated reading critics like F.R. Leavis, who was a great favourite of my English professor. But my global rejection of the species was punctured when I was introduced in German 3 to George Steiner. Steiner was a critic interested in the limits of language, which he described as a grid for meaning. Lots can fall through the holes in a grid. He also wrote that language has frontiers that give proof of a transcendent presence in the fabric of the world. It is because speech so marvelously fails us that we experience the certitude of a divine meaning. Now, a modern skeptic would probably not go along with Steiner's contention that what lies beyond man's word is eloquent of God. But my argument is that our modern conception of God is too limited. Allowing logos to intrude into the apprehension of God has returned modern people to the Old Testament jealous, punishing God who takes sides, which leads modern atheists to want to kick him out. Get rid of religion, it's had its day, and it's caused enough hate and havoc. My goal today was to have a go at this notion that religion has had its day. That is a white, Western, privileged point of view that does not ring true in Africa, India, Indonesia, or the Middle East. I think we need to have a spiritual practice, a let's do it religion, in place of a I believe religion. It's valuable to do Armstrong's 12-step compassion course, or the Course of Miracles, or to study the Toltec Four Agreements, read the Bible attentively, or study Bach motets. How you do it is up to you. That doesn't matter. To live in this world of conflict and pain, in harmony with others, we need to trim back our egos and activate parts of our psyches that lie dormant if we restrict our thinking to pragmatic logos at the expense of muthos, the transcendent. I'll finish with another Einstein quote for you to wrestle with. All religions, arts, and sciences are branches of the same tree.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.